from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Tanya Mosley. California is still the envy of the world. At least that's according to Governor Gavin Newsom. This was his response last week to criticism of our state by national press. Governor Newsom says he's tired of California being compared to states like Texas, especially when it comes to business. But how do these two states measure up? In its new cover story, A Tale of Two States, The Economist magazine investigates the competing visions of California and Texas on important issues like regulations, taxes, education, immigration, and the environment. Coming up on Forum, we'll talk with senior correspondent Alexandria Sewich Bass, and we want to hear what you think. That's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Tanya Mosley, in today for Michael Krasny. California and Texas have the country's two largest economies, but in many ways are radically different. Texas is known for low taxes and little regulation, while our state, California, is known for higher taxes and environmental safeguards. Both places are thought to be models for what the future of our country could look like. We'll talk about which vision might prevail with The Economist's senior correspondent, Alexandria Sewich Bass, author of the new article, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States. And she joins me now in the studio. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tanya.
This is a really fascinating article because, yeah, when you think about it, we're the two largest states in the country and yet so different. What brought you to do this reporting?
So actually, this is of great interest to me. I split time between California and Texas. I'm a native San Franciscan, married to a Texan, and so became really interested in the apparent differences, but also some of the similarities between the two states. And a lot of people don't realize how important these states are in America. One in five Americans lives in California and Texas. By 2050, one in four will. Their economies are as large as most countries. They rank countries, they'd be the fifth and tenth largest economies in the world. Mm. So these are huge economic forces in America and political forces as well. So I really wanted to dive deeper and understand what worked about the states, what didn't, and what's so different.
Let's get into that. First, I want to know, do you and your spouse have arguments about which state is better?
All the time.
But
I think Texans in particular are a very proud, competitive bunch. And so every Texan that I interviewed for this story almost objected to the intellectual exercise. They said, why would you even compare us to California? We're so clearly better. And so I think that there's... That Texans can use a little bit of humility as well. And that's what I ultimately argue for in the story, that both states should really learn from each other. They both do some things incredibly well, both have problems.
So you break down your article into five categories: taxation, education, welfare, immigration, and environmentalism. And you say so much of America's future rides on California and Texas's success. How so?
In a lot of different ways. So one is in the sheer number of people who are living in these states and are being educated in these states. So nearly a quarter of American children are going through Californian and Texan schools. Mm-hmm. So that's just one example of how the investment that these states are making, or the lack thereof, and we can get into it, is going to affect American competitiveness and jobs, job creation nationally. These are the largest blue and red states. Mm-hmm. In the country. And so the political preferences and how they might be changing, like Texas, will hold enormous sway for the country. So those are just two examples of how important they are.
Governor Newsom interviewed with the editorial board of the San Francisco Chronicle on Friday, and he said, every year, the business executive magazines come out and say California is the worst place to do business, number 50 in the nation, and that they say the best places are Tennessee and Texas. But if it's all about gross domestic product, we outperform everyone. Is that true based on your reporting?
Well, I think it's hard to make the case that it's all about gross domestic product. GDP counts for a lot, but that does not necessarily ensure a prosperous future for all Californians. And I think it's really important. One of the things that California can learn from Texas is how to look at the business environment and make tweaks and competitive adjustments. So Texas has had this very holistic strategy of trying to woo business to the state. California has had a strategy that sounds a little bit like what the governor just said on Friday, which is more of a laissez-faire attitude. We'll build it and they'll come to us. We have a lot to offer. And I think increasingly there are a lot of challenges in California to doing business. And we see that in the movement of firms out of California. It's not an exodus. So I don't buy the Texan narrative that all Californians and all businesses are moving to Texas. But
we are seeing something happening. And you talk about this in your reporting. I actually did an informal survey last year asking folks where they're moving and why, based on other data that shows that folks are moving to other places in the world. And Texas is a very popular spot, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you see in surveys, it's really surprising the number of Californians that are considering moving out of state. Texas is one of the leading states that they're moving to. So in the last 10 years, we saw about 1 million Americans move out of California. A quarter of them went to Texas. It's the cost of living is the main driver. So California has gotten so expensive. The majority of those who are leaving California are earning less than $50,000 a year. So housing is one of the main issues that's pushing them away in search of opportunity elsewhere. And then we also see companies. So one is people choosing to find work elsewhere electively. Another is companies choosing to expand to other states, and Texas is one place. And so when they offer their employees the option of moving, a lot of them are interested because they can afford a much better life in a state like Texas than California.
You write that California's heavy regulation across most industries takes a toll on small and medium-sized businesses. You actually quote one businessman who says it's easier to do business in Cuba than San Francisco. What's the difference in regulation when it comes to small businesses in Texas, which I found it really fascinating that even on the legislative front, like their legislature doesn't even meet every year like we meet.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's every other year for 140 days. And the joke is that they wanted it to be every 140th year for 2 days, but they didn't get their way. The comparison to Cuba is a lighthearted one, but I think actually kind of real. I mean, it was a sincere comment. It depends on which industry one's talking about, but one is minimum wage requirements, which are a lot higher in California. I think some would argue that that's actually
$15 an hour.
$15 an hour versus the federal minimum wage of $7.25, which is Texas's standard. And I think that a higher minimum wage is needed to get by in California, but that obviously has an impact on businesses as well. Another is environmental regulation, which is a huge issue, and that has a direct consequence for housing and new development and the affordability of housing units in California. And so it's increasingly difficult to house your employees, regardless of which industry you're in, even the tech community. We see companies like Google coming out acknowledging how difficult it is to find housing for their employees and pledging $1 billion to build new units. So I think that has an impact whichever industry you're in, but particularly in the real estate and development industry. And one of the most interesting comments conversations I had with an interviewee was with Ross Perot Jr., a developer in Texas, who made the point that actually California's politics, which exact heavy fees for new buildings, and they're very strong, both environmental standards but also regulations for new developments, that actually favors big developers. It makes it really hard for small developers to do business in California. So it kind of discriminates against people with a smaller balance sheet. And of course, this affects consumers across California because whatever the fees are for new developments and lengthy review processes, this directly goes into what the rent will be when the new developments finally open.
We're talking about the country's two largest economies, California and Texas, and their different approaches to governance. We're with Alexandria Suich-Bass. She is the senior correspondent for politics, technology, and society for The Economist. And she's the author of the special report, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States. We want to put a listener call out to you. How do you think the states compare? Does California have lessons to learn from Texas? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Now, you brought up the history of kind of this wooing of California business folks and residents to Texas. And I thought it was really fascinating that Governor Rick Perry had this aggressive hunting. He called them hunting trips.
He did.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So he would come out, no rifle in hand, but he would come out to California and try and hunt new businesses and woo them to Texas. So he would hold dinners. He actually ran a radio ad arguing that if you were unhappy in California, you should consider Texas as your destination. So the rivalry between Texas and California that Governor Newsom speaks about runs deep and long. But, you know, I think regardless of what one thinks about Rick Perry and how effective those trips were, I think it did show a very concerted effort on the part of the state to invest in business development. So almost like a company would put money into acquiring new clients and lead generation, Texas took that approach. So it wasn't just to California. They would go to other states,
as well.
And that continues with this governor, Greg Abbott. He has what is called a deal closing fund to offer incentives to companies that are willing to relocate or expand to Texas. And an example of that that's close to home is Charles Schwab, headquartered in San Francisco, which by the end of this year will have more employees in Texas than it does in California. Its headquarters are still technically here, but it's expanding a lot of jobs in Texas, and it was given $6 million in incentives to do so.
Culturally, how has this wave, you mentioned the wave of Californians moving to Texas, how has that impacted politics at all?
I would argue that we're just starting to be able to answer that question. So on a state level, already we're seeing a huge impact in cities. And so a lot of Texas's largest cities, which are the economic engine of the state, the Texas Triangle between Dallas, Austin, Houston, San Antonio, has about 80% of the state's population, huge share of its GDP. And those are blue cities, and they're really experimenting with a lot of more progressive policies. So they have experimented or are trying to with raising the minimum wage, offering paid sick leave, plastic bag bans, banning fracking. And we see a really interesting philosophical tension in the state because Texas has always argued for state autonomy and local control. So no intervention from the federal government. Mm-hmm. But now that the cities are going blue and experimenting with policies that are not historically Texan values, we're seeing the state try to control the cities and come in and stop some of these experiments, like the fracking ban in Denton, for example. So it's this really interesting tension, I think, about whether the state will continue to allow this local experimentation. But I think it's undoubted that Texas is becoming more progressive.
Some of the weaknesses, though, for Texas is that it relies on importing talent, correct? So lots of people are moving there for jobs. But as far as investing in the folks who are already there, that's a challenge. It's a challenge for California as well. We have a lot of imports who come here for industry.
Right. But I think California is more willing to acknowledge the important role that immigration plays in its development and in its boom. Around a quarter of Californians are immigrants, and a lot of them high-skilled immigrants coming from other countries. Texas and the leadership in Texas likes to talk about the Texas miracle, which is this economic boom that while post-financial crisis, post-2008, while many U.S. states were suffering, Texas was continuing to grow. I think there's two points to make about that. One is that we saw a huge growth in minimum wage, low wage jobs, mm-hmm. which was propelling that quote unquote miracle. And the other is that it's facilitated by Texas's growth, as you point out, is facilitated by a lot of Americans moving to Texas who have higher levels of educational achievement than people in Texas are attaining. And so thinking forward, one of the existential issues for Texas is how to prepare its own citizens for the job market and where it's going. As more opportunities are going to be knowledge-based, they really need to bring up the educational achievement in the state.
Speaking of education, though, both California and Texas seem to be doing poorly when it comes to educating its students. Talk a little bit more about that.
So that was a really interesting chapter in the special report, because you would think that money might buy results. And California invests much, much more in its students than Texas does. And this is this is one of those symbolic differences between Texas and California, where I would argue that California has a high tax, high investment model in its citizens. Texas, low tax, low investment. But neither state performs very well. In terms of the proficiency in fourth grade reading, less than a third of students in both states in fourth grade reading are proficient. I mean, it's really appalling.
They're ranking 36th and 41st, respectively.
Exactly. And so I tried to explain why that might be. So despite the spending differences, why we're seeing shared poor outcomes. And one is that the money doesn't go very far in California. The cost of living is so high. So even though teachers are paid about 50% more in California than Texas, housing is so expensive that it doesn't necessarily translate into ease of life. And then another point is the role of unions, actually. And Texas is a right-to-work state. It doesn't have a strong union infrastructure. Mm-hmm. California, it does. And that may also affect results. And we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we will. I'm talking with Alexandra Sewich-Bass. She is a senior correspondent for Politics, Technology, and Society for The Economist. And she's the author of the special report we're talking about, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States. Join this conversation. Give us a call at 866-736-7786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. And we have a couple of questions right now from folks who are calling in. I'm going to take William of Belvedere. Hello, William. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. The guest made a statement, that a million people are leaving California each year. Well, indeed, the population of California is increasing by 500,000 each year. So there may be a million people leaving, but then there must be 1,500,000 coming. So that's important. The second thing is, when she speaks of the Texas miracle, I would say that the miracle is that anybody at all survived the recent flooding in Houston, because the chemical plants were built right in the midst of the residential neighborhoods. And I'd appreciate her comments.
Thank you so much, William. He brings up a good point about population growth in California, folks leaving, folks coming.
Yep.
And then the environmental factors in Texas.
So to the first point, and thank you for your questions. The first point is the statistic is that between 2007 and 2016, we saw 1 million Americans leave California to another state net. So we still are seeing international immigrants come to California, and a domestic population growth, a natural population growth. So that's why we're still seeing a positive growth, although I should point out that California's population is not growing as quickly as Texas's is. To the point about the environment, which I think is critical, this is one of the ways that California and Texas have completely different philosophies. We see California take tremendous leadership on climate change. While the nation has stepped back, California has stepped forward as it relates setting targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and living by standards that are actually even more strict than the Paris Accord. And so California has been a leader here. We can talk about what costs that carries for
Californians. Right, because you say that it's good for the environment, but it's taxing to citizens.
It is, because California's climate policies raise the cost of electricity and gas, which it falls disproportionately on the poor. To the question on Houston, I would say that this is a really interesting area where the business community, which usually is in lockstep with the political leadership in Texas, is now out of sync. And so the business community in Houston is growing increasingly concerned about climate change as a result of Hurricane Harvey and some of the other natural disasters that they've been seeing. And the political community is not yet acknowledging the role of climate change. And so I would expect that within the next 10 years, we're going to see the political leadership in Texas need to acknowledge the role of climate change.
On the state level, yeah.
On the state level. But so far, we are not. And Harvey is one of the examples that people point to as creating a much larger division between populations and the state's leaders.
Let's take another call. We have Kathy in Santa Clara. Hi, Kathy. Or do we have Chris? Hi, Chris. We have Chris in Roseville. How are you? What's your question?
Good, thanks. Okay, so I'm the odd bird. I'm the Texan that moved to California, but for reasons. And I've always had this lingering question in my mind whether or how the tax policies are affecting the migration that you've studied. So, for example, my family members in Texas pay super high taxes on their property, but California has outlawed that, so to speak. However, you've got this big difference in income taxes. So I'm curious if you're seeing large portions of high-income earners moving to avoid that income tax, or if it's not true. And I apologize for not having read your article yet, but to the top of my list.
Thank you, Chris, in Roseville, for that question. Yeah, we have the highest income tax in the nation, correct?
Correct. The highest top tax rate, for high earners.
Yes, but high property taxes in Texas. Does that impact the types of folks who are migrating back and forth?
Yes, so totally different tax regime. So on a personal level, as Chris and you just pointed out, the top rate of 13.3%, and it's been going up, actually, in the last decade for top earners. So far, Californians have been willing to pay that without moving en masse. We hear about millionaires or very successful people moving, but they're the exception. As I mentioned earlier, most people are earning under $50,000 a year. But I would argue that where we do see an impact is in businesses, taxes, and so cities exacting more tax from businesses, and that potentially pushing them away out of San Francisco and other places.
We're talking with Alexandra Sewich Bass about her article, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States in The Economist. We'll talk a little bit more about folks who are leaving and what that means and how the two states fare when it comes to the way that folks can live and work in those communities and what it means for our country. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Tanya Mosley, in for Michael Krasny. We're talking about the country's two largest economies, California and Texas, and their different approaches to governance. I'm with Alexandra Sewich Bass. She's the senior correspondent for politics, technology, and society for The Economist. And she's written this dynamic article, this special report, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States. We're talking about how they differ, how they're the same, and how really they're a peek into the future of our country. Join the conversation. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions at forum at KQED.com. Org. And Alexandra, we were talking a little bit about the tech backlash and the impact this has had really on California and Texas and the moving of different companies. Kind of talk to me about some of the things that you learned in comparing these two states.
Well, I think that there's this this critical tension right now in the Bay Area in a couple ways. One is that the Bay Area has been moving while the rest of the state of California has not. And so we see a divergence in the fortunes between between California and the thriving Bay Area and some of the issues that they're facing. Another tension is how to treat the most successful tech firms and tech elite. And I think that there's this motivation or incentive locally, especially in San Francisco, for techies to pay more of their due. Mm-hmm. And I think that the real tension in the next few years that's going to play out is how to get techies to contribute to society and deal with local anger about displacement and gentrification in San Francisco while not alienating the companies and the people who have created economic success for the Bay Area or contributed to it. And that's where I think you really see differing opinions. And Proposition C, which yes. taxes companies to pay for homeless services, is a really good example, with some on who are proponents saying that this is important, this is needed. How could a city like San Francisco, which has had huge economic success, not take care of the underprivileged and those who have not taken part in this boom? And then others saying, hey, California is already the most highly taxed state for top earners. There's a lot of businesses that are not as high margin as tech that are affected by Prop C. This is just an example of why it's less attractive to move to do business in California, and we're going to consider other options. And there's actually a couple companies that pointed directly to Prop C for why they've looked to move to Texas. And so I think this tension between wanting to ensure a more egalitarian rise for all Californians and prosperity for all Californians, and treating business fairly and being pro-business is going to be one of the issues for California in the next 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. What I found really fascinating, you touched on this earlier, but when we talk about the types of Californians that are moving to Texas, and we think about the type of ecosystem, the kind of diversity we want in our communities in California, what you found is that the median income is $50,000 a year, and they only have high school education. Folks who are moving to Texas to be able to have mobility and growth. Are you finding folks in higher tax brackets also, and the percentages of those who are also moving, or are we really finding a disparity in those of a certain economic level who are fleeing the state?
I think it's both. I think it's absolutely both. I think on the lower earner side, people are able to do the math and understand what they would be able to take home in another state and keep versus what they're spending on housing. And you talk to Uber, Lyft drivers as just one category of people who are considering moves, who are driving in to San Francisco from 2 hours away and are seeing, for example, in Stockton and in places that are far away from San Francisco, their rents rise as a result of the tech boom, but there haven't been the commensurate opportunities and job growth in their community, so they're needing to come in. So we see it on the low-wage side, and then we also see it on the higher-earning side, where I think people are expecting the legislature to continue to tax the wealthy disproportionately. And already 1% of Californians account for 46% of personal income tax revenue. So it's a very lopsided system because of Proposition 13 and caps on the rate at which property taxes can rise. So heavily dependent on personal income tax, heavily dependent on the wealthy. That makes California very vulnerable to two things. One is a recession. So if the stock market collapses, its fortunes will decline. And then the other is the movement of very successful people out of California.
And California is in a very precarious position with that. I mean, if there was a bust, if there's a boom, then that's catastrophic.
Absolutely. I mean, California has a historic budget surplus of $20 billion in reserves today. That, even in a mild recession, would be wiped out within a single year. So while it's laudable that Governor Newsom and others are contributing more to the rainy day fund and being more cautious about ongoing spending and what commitments they're making to new items in the long term. We're seeing some experiment with new investments, but they have sunset provisions. They're going to go out in a couple years in case the economy turns. So that's very laudable. What's worrisome is that there have been no structural changes to the tax system that will ensure more stability going forward. And so California is on this roller coaster ride along with the stock market.
You split your time between Texas, between Dallas and San Francisco, right?
That's right.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that?
For about four or five years now.
Culturally, what are the differences and perhaps what are the similarities? And are you seeing changes in each, especially in Dallas with the influx of Californians?
I am. I had a really interesting conversation with someone who's in the construction industry recently, who said to me, I told him I was working on this piece on California and Texas, and his eyes got wide and he said, yes, Californians, they're coming for our economic opportunities, but they're bringing their values along with them.
Oh.
And of course, I'm one of those San Franciscans who spends time in Dallas. Dallas is absolutely changing. I think that Dallas has... in some ways has a cloud over it, both because of the TV show and then because of the assassination of JFK in Dallas. But it's a changing city, and it's increasingly progressive, as are a lot of the other cities in Texas. But huge differences, and I would say the number one is what is expected of government. In Texas, the idea is that you can make it on your own.
Less government.
And government is something to be tamed and pushed back, almost like at the rodeo. You know, you're wanting to get control of the animal. In California, government is something to be bridled and embraced and work on behalf of citizens. Mm-hmm. And I would say that that's the biggest difference.
Let's take some calls. We have Kathy in Santa Clara. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, hi there. I was hoping to raise an issue that maybe... Alexandra could address. It's, again, about taxes and cities. In the city of Palo Alto, for example, we're facing a $900 million unfunded pension obligation for our public sector union employees. And we're seeing a number of fees, as you mentioned, building permit fees, even down to the level of the homeowner to take on infrastructure costs for the city and pay fees, which seems to be in some cases almost a disguised tax that isn't being raised because people don't want to raise taxes, but they're using development and other manner to raise fees to actually not take money out of the general fund, potentially, so that taxes don't need to be raised and public sector union wages can be maintained. In Los Altos, they recently voted down a proposed storm drain fee outside of the general fund, but actually trying to raise a fee on the inhabitants. And the inhabitants turned it down and said, why doesn't the general fund fund this as it has done for decades? So I think that's an issue to be considered.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you so much for raising the pension point. I think the bigger picture is that California is experiencing unprecedented prosperity, and there's the question of whether California is going to grapple with many of its long-term challenges at this moment, even though those would come with political pushback. And so one of those is the long-term pension obligations that California has. access for teachers and public sector workers. And I think it's politically tempting to push out any major reform, and certainly politically popular. But I think that it's something ultimately the state is going to need to address. And I think one of the big questions is whether the state is going to continue to have defined benefit contributions and pensions. So, i.e., set obligations for retirees, or if it's going to have to move more to a defined contribution model. But I think that this tension between what's in the interest of older Californians and what's in the interest of newer Californians, and what California's politicians are willing to grapple with that on issues that are socially and politically unpopular, and if they're willing to make tough decisions, is going to be a key one for California.
We're talking with Alexandra Sewich-Bash. She's a senior correspondent for The Economist, and she's the author of a special report, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States. And we have a couple of comments, listener comments. One writes about gas and oil severance tax. Texas, an oil state, has a severance tax on the oil companies. California does not, yet has one of the highest income taxes. Why won't California legislators with a Democratic supermajority not pass a severance tax instead of preferring to tax its low and middle class residents?
It's a really interesting question. There are in both states a bunch of corporate tax loopholes. The severance tax in California is an example of one. I think the tension will be, and it may well kind of make its way to the legislature, although no one's really talking about it. The question is how you ensure you want to raise revenue, but you also want to keep gas prices low. And gas prices in California are already the highest in the country because of the unique formulation that's required here, the more environmentally friendly formulation that's required. So getting that balance right is a tricky one, but I could imagine that is one of the sources of revenue that legislators look to going forward.
Let's take another call. We have Kelly in San Jose. Hey, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Your question?
Yes. I hope it's okay to go back to education.
Yes.
But I'm curious a couple of things. One is I'm wondering if there was any kind of study done about the different languages of the children that are coming into schools in both Texas and California. In California, I know in my classroom, I have 6 to 7 different languages being spoken. So the education I have to do with English language learning is very different depending on all the different languages. Additionally, when I think Alexandra said 1/3 of Californian children who are in fourth grade are reading proficient, I'm curious to know what she has to say about the difference between testing, because California is a Common Core testing state. Mm. Texas has its own type of testing that they have made up, and what I have heard is that the Texas test is significantly easier than the Common Core test.
Good questions. Thank you so much, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly. Mm-hmm. So on the second point, this is according to NAEP, the National Assessment for Educational Progress, which does its own test in both states. So it's not actually relying on state tests, which, as you point out, can be very different in terms of their rigorousness. And that finds that California and Texas do lag the country in reading, but of course have very different demographics. Much higher share of English language learners, which I'll get to with your first question, and low-income students. And so when you rank California and Texas in terms of their educational performance for those groups versus other states and their performance with those low-income minorities, they do okay. It's just that California and Texas need to be investing more in those groups. To your first point about English language learners, both California and Texas have a huge share. One of the differences between California and Texas is what the state is willing to fund in terms of experimentation and the latitude that it gives to school districts. And so Texas, in this last legislative session, Biden passed a huge bill, a $5.4 billion investment in public education. And that gives money to school districts that want to offer a merit pay program, which I think is really interesting.
So, for teachers.
For teachers. So teachers who are willing to work in high needs areas or in classrooms with a high proportion of English language learners, which requires a lot of skill, they're able to be paid more, $8,000 to $10,000 more. And that, I think, could be really interesting and yield results. Because currently, teachers who are grappling with differences in language are not remunerated any differently in California.
How does Texas and California compare in higher education?
So this is one of those very interesting tests of Texas's will to transform itself. So starting under Rick Perry, the previous governor, Texas leader said, we need more tier one educational institutions. Texas does have Rice University, which is private, and University of Texas at Austin as tier one universities, very well respected, but not many for a state of its size.
Of its size, and compared to California.
And California, which has the leading, I would argue, the best public universities in the country are in California. And that's because California invested decades ago in creating them. And so why this is going to be a test of Texas is that Texas has claimed this is a priority. They want to see a large share of their population attend a university or get a higher degree or certificate within the next 15 years. But they're not putting money into the system to help achieve that. It's really limited. And again, because they don't have a state income tax, their budget is much smaller. They're more limited in their funds. But I think this will be a really important test of whether Texas is willing to go that extra mile and really invest in some of the things it says are priorities and that are going to be core for the competitiveness of the state going forward.
Let's talk a little bit about welfare. So California's official poverty rate is 13%. Texas is 14%. That's the middle of the national average. But I want you to lay out the differences, though, because they have very different approaches. We have a very different approach to welfare to Texas.
Absolutely. So California, when you adjust for cost of living, has the highest poverty rate of any state. And so it's one of the wealthiest states in the country and also the poorest. Texas is higher, but where Texas really lags is in health insurance. So they chose not to expand under Obamacare, and so they now have the highest uninsured rate in the country. Both states have huge issues with poverty and how to grapple with them, but very different philosophies of what the role of government should be. And so one place that we see that is in cash welfare. So the federal government gives money to states to spend on cash welfare, but gives them a lot of discretion in how to spend it. And we see California put a lot of that money toward cash welfare for poor families and then actually supplement it with some of their own money from the state. Texas diverts almost all of that money to other programs. It doesn't believe in cash welfare. So it puts money toward pregnancy prevention and other things. And so I think that's one symbolic example of how the states have very different philosophies in what the role of government is and what type of social safety net they're wanting to weave.
You started this project with this idea, taking a look at both of the states and seeing exactly how they fare, but then what they can learn from each other. And what did you find there?
So I would say that neither is really looking to each other at the moment. I think Governor Newsom's comments, which
speaks to that,
which you mentioned earlier, alluded to that. Although he did tell me when I interviewed him that they were in the process of studying what Texas did on the business development front and wanted to take some tools from the Texan toolkit. California, when it comes to learning from California, Texas has this expression that's a rallying cry for the States Republicans that is "Don't California my Texas."
There are bumper stickers.
There's bumper stickers and even T-shirts that you can buy with the slogan. And so I think my first point is that there is not yet a sufficient appetite to learn from each other, but they should, because these are two of the 50 labs of innovation in America. They're experimenting in different ways. And so I would point out a couple things that they can learn from each other. I would say that California is very good at both predicting the future and creating the future when it comes to social trends. So one example would be gay marriage, which California was very early on. The winds that originate here in California sweep the rest of the country. And so rather than fighting those, which Texas has historically, I think it's important to stay in tune with them. And I think that California can learn from Texas when it comes to the role of companies and the importance of cultivating capitalism and job creation to ensure prosperity. And I think that California has done a great job with that historically. I do think the mood is turning because of the inequality here in California. And so thinking very deliberately about what role business can play in society and should play and what should be asked of business versus government is something Texas has a very unique view on that, but it's something that Californians should study.
I have a few more comments from folks who've written in. Some pushback. This one, Patrick, says, "Thanks for the Let's Bash California Hour. Yeah, I'd love to go to Texas and buy a super cheap, huge house on poisoned land, drink water laced with fracking chemicals, breathe refinery exhaust, and have to drive an hour to get groceries." Lanny says, "What are the racial demographics of people moving to Texas? A couple friends have considered it and decided they could not live in a state they perceive as racist, homophobic, and aggressively anti-choice." Do you have a breakdown of the racial dynamic of folks who are moving there?
We do. Through the source of information for that is IRS tax receipts and filing. So we do not have the racial breakdown of those who are moving. We do know the racial demographics of population growth.
Yeah.
So in Texas last year, for every one white person that was added to the state population, we saw 9 Hispanics. It's soon going to be the plurality in Texas. Right now it's 40% of the population. And so the idea that it is kind of it is heavily white is no longer true, although there's certainly different racial tensions in Texas than there are in California. To the first point about bashing California, I would say that it goes without saying that California has a tremendous amount to offer. Some of the most beautiful coastline in America, some of the best innovation, and I think that's evident in the companies that were created here. But I do think that it would be a mistake to not use this moment of unprecedented prosperity to reflect on what needs to change in California and use the opportunity while we're at running at a high to make some of the changes that could ensure California's success long term.
And in doing this assessment, you're really looking at what this means for the future of America, how these two states are symbolic, a symbolic look at what the future of America looks like. Talk a little bit more about that.
So these states are so core to America's future. And I think that while the federal government is caught up in so much dysfunction and not able to make some of the important changes it needs to, for one example being on immigration and passing a comprehensive immigration reform bill to allow for legal immigrants to come here and set what we want our country to be from an immigration standpoint. While the federal government is caught up in bickering, where we're going to see innovation and progress is on the state level, and in particularly in these mega states, California and Texas. And so if there is a hopeful vision for America's future, I think we should be looking to the two states, because this is where we're going to see a lot of activity and a lot of progress.
I want to take one or two more calls. We have Brent in Napa. Brent, your question.
Hi there. This is a really interesting conversation. Like one of your earlier callers, I too moved from Texas to Napa for the wine industry. But one interesting thing, with all due respect to the woman you're interviewing who seems really sweet. A lot of Texans would laugh if they were told that Dallas is the city that she was getting all of her information from. We look at Dallas as being a real outlier in Texas. But also I wanted to make the point to some of the other individuals that there seems to be this idea that Texas is this very heavily Republican state. So when people talk about poison water or low taxes or, you know, a lot of these issues, you have to remember places like Houston, it's a Democratic-controlled county. We've had, you know, the first gay mayor in Houston and East Parker not too many years ago. But there's a lot of Democrats who actually control the role of producing laws, resolutions. And so I want to make sure that people understand that Texas is not this big Republican state. The places like Austin, Houston, if you see problems there, they're honestly being led by a Democratic-controlled city council or legislature. I think it's just important to make that distinction.
Thank you. Yep, absolutely. Thank you, Brent from Napa. He brings up something that we brought up earlier and that you have researched in your piece about the demographics of Texas and red versus blue and what that looks like and the changing face of it.
I think that this this coming election in 2020 is going to be a true test of what the real Texas is. So as more Hispanics register to vote and are potentially pushed to register to vote because of Donald Trump's very heated rhetoric on immigration, I think that we will see Texas potentially, I would say we'll see Texas get closer to being blue. I don't think that it will go blue in 2020. But of course, so much depends on who the Senate candidate is and whether we see someone with the charisma and appeal like Beto O'Rourke running on the Democratic side. And then, of course, who the presidential candidate is and the appeal to Texans. But I think this question of whether the progressive cities are auguring what the future of Texas is or whether they're very different and will always stay different and not necessarily the future is the key question about Texas.
Very interesting and very interesting topic that we can talk another hour on if we had it. Thank you so much for joining me, Alexandra Sewich-Bass. She's a senior correspondent for politics, technology, and society for The Economist. She's the author of the special report, California and Texas, A Tale of Two States. I'm Tanya Mosley. Thank you for joining us and stay for hour two of Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.